The key thing is how to convince yourself about problem being really worth it. When you can work on a million different things, why do you choose exactly this? And how do you know that this is something you will sustain for the long term? And are you really passionate about this? Does this actually mean something for you to fix? And these are some of the sort of core questions. And if you find these really worthy problems to solve and you find brilliant people, then it's not just about making another exit. It's about having fun on the journey, doing stuff that most people think is completely crazy and not possible. But it is possible. If you put together the right fundament and the right people, it's completely possible.
This can't be it. There has to be more. Wait, am I crazy? No. If you're yearning for more and working hard to make your dreams a reality, then you're in the right place. Welcome to Dreamcatchers. It's the only show committed to helping you self-actualize and then transcend, leaving you with the legacy you've always desired. Listen in on conversations with successful philanthropists, entrepreneurs, and founders every week as we connect with them for inspiration, education, and direction. Your host, Jerome Myers, is here to help you exit the matrix and transform into a leader of your own revolution. The question is, do you believe your dreams should be real? Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Dreamcatchers podcast. I'm your host, Jerome, and we've popped over the pond. I have Håvard with me. I don't actually know what country he's in. He said Norwegian earlier, but I don't feel like that's a country. I don't know what's going on. I'm showing my lack of education on this part of the world. But we got introduced through Tracy Clark. She was a guest on the podcast a few weeks ago. If you guys don't remember that episode, you absolutely need to jump on and check that one out because she dropped a ton of jewels. We dove deep on some of the most important topics for those of you who are trying to take things to the next level. Now, Håvard, I opened the show by asking the guests a simple question. So you had an exit.
I had two, actually.
You've had two exits. Okay, you don't look old enough to have two exits, but we'll dig into that in a second. Thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show. I know the time zones are off, so it's probably pretty early where you are right now.
It's actually pretty late. It's evening, yeah.
Oh my gosh. You're the man. You're a gentleman for sure. So let's talk about exits. So what kind of companies did you build? Give us the backstory.
The backstory kind of, it obviously started the way before the exits. And I'm a serial entrepreneur since 22 years. I'm 44 years old now. And the entrepreneurial journey started 22 years ago. But even before that, it started because I grew up in a founder's family. So my dad was a founder. And I think it's deeply rooted in the mindset and what kind of training do you get as a kid? How do you view the world? How do you set yourself up for some of the cool stuff? My background, I decided to go to a master in business and economics. And in my master's thesis, I actually studied Norwegian successful entrepreneurs. What do the best ones do differently than anyone else or all the others? And getting firsthand insight into these type of mindsets from those who have actually built very successful businesses as a 21, 22-year-old at the time was definitely part of forming my mindset for my own entrepreneurial journey. Yeah, I was quite young when I finished my master. I was 22 years old and I went right off to establish my first startup. It was an IT startup and we did actually some pretty cool stuff. This was in advertising and we were able to launch some videos very quickly. And this is back in the days where bandwidth was a huge issue. It was like 2002, 2003. And the internet was very different compared to what it is today. So launching something quickly was a unique feature. And we were actually able to do a eBay campaign together with eBay globally for a big advertising campaign. And we thought, so now we really hit the sort of the golden bird. And then I was in a DD process with a few investors. And I really needed the investment to come in because you run out of cash if you don't get an investment. During the DD process, they actually pulled away. So I was left there with way too high cost and not enough liquidity. And I was like, shit, 25 years old and looking at my first, I wouldn't call it failure because I learned so crazy much from this. But a year later, the company filed for insolvency I was 25 years old and I was working crazy hours, like I was actually logging my hours. It was like 3,000, 3,500 hours a year, which is pretty crazy. But you accumulate a lot of insights and learnings from all these crazy hours. The problem was that when you're a young entrepreneur, it's extremely hard to know what to do and what not to do. So you end up wasting so much time working on the wrong stuff. And your inexperience is trapping you, or your mindset is trapping you. And the only way to get out of this is to work with really experienced people, tap into their minds, be humble, know that you have some wrong assumptions, even if you don't know which one of them are wrong. And this is a little hard stuff, like this being aware of your blind spot, because obviously you don't think that your own assumptions are wrong. But with experience, it comes this realization that I am wrong in some of these key assumptions. And I want to find those errors in my thinking as quickly as I can. I don't want to develop a product for 2 years and figure out that there is no customer willing to actually buy this for the price that is. You rather check these very key assumptions extremely early. So I went on to work in a company that did an IPO. I was the local CFO, was a solar cell production, actually making the crystalline solar cells that later are producing energy from the sun. And it was a very high-tech company. We invested 100 million euros in some production lines producing these solar cells. And we grew the company from 88 employees to 330. And as a 26-year-old, I got this responsibility to manage the accounting and the controlling and all the economy stuff for this company. And that was pretty crazy because 26 years old, come on, you're quite young at that age. But I had actually accumulated a lot of experience from my first startup. So I wouldn't say I was a senior because I clearly wasn't, but I did have some experience working with investors and working with financials modeling and these kind of things. I did that for a few years. And investing 100 million euros is quite a lot of money. Our budgets were like reaching, I think, 200 million euros in revenues. And so it was crazy growth. And then I got an idea when I was 27. One of the problems I saw in the solar cell production was that there was no takers of some of the B-grade solar cells. I had some thoughts, though. Maybe I could figure out a better way to take this intrinsic value of them and upgrade them and get some working solar cells instead of basically throwing them away. And so I went to some venture capitalists, the best ones in the Nordics, and I asked if this could be of their interest. And at the same time, I was evaluating if this was worth it for me to quit a job and go into the entrepreneurship again, having worked all these crazy hours. Is that really what you want? But they really liked this. I liked that. And we formed a team. And in 2008, when I was 28, we launched this company and took this from my own idea to 180 employees, 35 million euros in revenue, 3 factories. And now you may think that's the exit story, but it actually isn't.
What? You went from 0 to 35 million euros. 300 employees.
180 employees.
Oh, so 180 employees.
Some really good people that I was fortunate enough to work together with. And then came this solar winter. This was like in the solar business. And it was a massive oversupply of products. So people started selling products below the actual cost of making them, like the actual cash cost of making them. And that is a nightmare because the more you sell, the more you lose. But if you don't sell anything, you are stuck with your products and you certainly die. So how can you survive in this environment for that lasted basically about 2 years? And most of the European solar cell business shut down because of all of this, because you don't have access to free capital. No investors are willing to invest into something that is losing money, whatever you do. We eventually, in 2015, we shut down this business. And on the way to court, because I was the one who had to file for administrative close down or something, the insolvency of the company. And the chairman of the board called me and it was a really dark day for me. And he said, "Howard, this isn't so bad for you. You have Norway's most expensive MBA. 52 million euros it has cost us. Go use that for something good. That actually really shifted my mindset. And it's okay, we actually did some crazy cool stuff. We were very successful in the start. And then this negative spiral came and this market environment was completely crazy. And we filed for this insolvency. But for those 7-8 years, I was the founder and the CFO of this company. I worked with some super cool and great people amongst those three CEOs. And we did some fantastic things. And I really thought of this as, wow, a 52 million euro MBA. Who has that? I do. And yeah, you actually learn a lot during these 7-8 years when you work with the really brilliant people. Your mindset is formed, the way of conducting yourself. There's a lot of stuff that you actually learn from all of this. And then it's like, okay, he said, go use that for something good. And I did. And so then we're coming to the sort of this is the backstory before the two exits. And 2015, I was standing there and I was basically wondering, what in the world should I do now? I've spent 7-8 years on this startup. I've been working, raising about 100 million euros in financing for my company. I've been working with very professional investors. I've learned how they think, how they conduct themselves, how they work. I said, okay, well, how can I use this, all these insights for good, really? And I kicked off actually two initiatives at almost the same time. One was synthetic diesel case, where you can basically reverse the diesel process. You can create diesel out of water and electricity and CO2. And we developed this for almost 5-6 years. And then the other founders, because I was involved in some other stuff and I couldn't really devote all my capacity to this company. So they decided to buy me out in a very friendly way. And that was one of my exits. And after that, the company has developed very successfully. So I obviously exited way too early, but still it was a very nice exit. And then the other company was, I was doing a data center. I looked in my immediate surrounding here in northern part of Norway, and there are quite little industrial use, like industries. There are not too many industries up here. And I have been working in the energy sector for about a decade. And it happened that we actually had the lowest cost of electricity in all of Europe. And not only that, it was all powered by hydroelectricity, so green energy. And it was a huge excess of this green energy that was just laying around, or it was not possible to even transport out of the region because of the current or the line limitations and everything. So you basically have like this suboptimal market where a huge amount of green electricity was locked in. And I started to figure out, okay, what kind of good use could we make out of this? It was basically 1 gigawatt of excess electricity, and that amounts to the largest data center in the world, if you can put this in an industrial setting. So I kicked off this project. I was able to buy some 640,000 square meters of land, which is really a lot of land, for almost nothing. And we kicked off a process to get some architects to design this and to how to finance this and everything. And then, it was a really cool project. And then came a company that wanted to acquire us, and I didn't want to sell, but a long story made short, my co-founders wanted to, and we sold the company for 10 million euros. And
did you have revenue?
No, nothing was built. And it's a very cool story. The access to all this green electricity was pretty insane, actually. Today and in the years later, or Google and all these big companies are buying these huge lands that they wanted, that they will buy, they will construct data centers on. And we had access to 1 gigawatt of electricity. So we launched a project called Kolos with the intent to build the largest data center in the world in northern Norway. I went live on BBC World News to talk about this data center, and we got 800 international articles about my data center. And it was a huge PR thing. It was like the most talked about data center in the world, really. And then this buyer came and they purchased it. And so it never became the data center I wanted. And when you stand there and you work years for something and you have a plan, and then someone comes and just wants a very different thing, and people are motivated by different things. I was motivated by creating lots of jobs and creating this in my local surroundings. And even though I didn't want to sell, I figured it was probably better to sell than to go into huge conflicts or stuff like that. And so I sold, and that basically changed my life, of course, in a very good way. And after that, I could really do more or less what I wanted. And what do you do when you don't have to be an employee? For me, I was like, I was really thinking about this for a long time. And after this, I've founded multiple startups. And in 2019, so 1 year after this exit, I founded a nanotech company because I was actually annoyed. Why do I have to wash my car? It's such a stupid thing. Why do I have to wash my car? It gets dirty all the time. And whatever car you make, if it's a Lamborghini or if it's a Volkswagen or a BMW, you have to wash them all, or Tesla. Why hasn't anyone figured out this stupid dirt problem? As I was starting to think about what I thought was worthy problems to solve, and I met a guy that had a PhD in material science, and he had insights into nanotechnology, and we kicked off this company Nanites together in 2019, so 5 years ago. And this is one of my sort of deep tech companies. We have developed coating that is more slippery than Teflon. And everyone knows Teflon, the cookingware and everything. And Teflon has a lot of bad stuff in it. Some forever chemicals, it doesn't degrade. It's about to be banned in the EU now and soon also. And nobody has a replacement or an alternative for this, of course, very useful product, but quite harmful. And we developed this solution that these multi-billion dollar companies have not figured out. So this is one of the companies I have now. It's pretty cool. I think there will be another exit. It's not too far in the future.
Hope you have the IP protected. Holy smokes.
Oh, absolutely. Man. Absolutely. Yes. It's very important. And it actually happens. So happens the CEO of this company, because I don't want to be CEO. I've been working with world-class CEOs for many years, and this is not my thing. I love the early phase. I know the CFO is how to fund things and stuff like that. So the CEO in this company was also one of the CEOs in my solar company. We worked together before. He used to work for the largest solar cell manufacturer in the world, 20,000 employees. He had a top management position in that company, chief operating officer, and a brilliant guy. And because when you develop these trustful relationships, and then it's really friendships. And he came back and wanted to work with heading up this nanotech company. So he's running this company now. And we're solving some pretty cool stuff. I love this. A few of these sort of companies that I think are solving really worthy problems together with brilliant people. And this is my mantra these days. The key thing is how to convince yourself about a problem being really worthy. When you can work on a million different things, why do you choose exactly this or that? And how do you know that this is something you will sustain for the long term? And are you really passionate about this? Does this actually mean something for you to fix? And these are some of the sort of core questions. And if you find these really worthy problems to solve and you find brilliant people, then it's not just about making another exit. It's about having fun on the journey, doing stuff that most people think is completely crazy and not possible. But it is possible. If you put together the right fundament and the right people, it's completely possible. My exits weren't the end of anything. It was the start of a new era where I'm in this fortunate position where I can really work with super smart people, have a sort of ecosystem around myself where I can do the things I love to do. And you mentioned Tracy, and Tracy is actually my coach. I've been working with her since about 3 years now, and I love working with her. We have these quarterly reviews. Every 3 months, we spend 3 hours together to challenge the thinking, the assumptions, how did it go, what was good, what was not good. So I know her pretty well, or at least she knows me very well.
So it's really interesting because of the way that you frame the exits. You basically made it so that the ones that had financial gain, significant financial gain, as the ones that were exits. But each time in every business venture that we have, there's going to come a point where our relationship ends with that business. And so for me, you've had four exits on the low side. When we talk about the first one where you guys ended up being insolvent, and then the second one with the venture capital. I can't remember if it was venture capital or private equity, but it was. Yeah. You had those folks come in. Those experiences, from my perspective, are the things that set you up for the second two.
Absolutely.
And I think so many people would have packed it up after the second one and said, I'm not cut out for this. I'm just going to go be an employee. And there's too much risk. There's too much. I lost too much. It was too much sacrifice. But you decided that I'm going to keep going. I just got to find the right problem. Is that right? Or you think I'm making it easier?
No, I think that's like, it's all about figuring out what do you love to do. And for me, I love to take on these very complex, I don't take on complex projects because of the complexity, but I take on projects that I think are really worthy problems to be solving that maybe not so many others dare to solve, or they don't have the funding, or they don't have the capabilities, or they don't know how to raise capital. Like raising capital for deep tech startups is one of the most challenging things. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, but now I raised like $140 million for my different startups. Of course we can raise capital. Come on. I've done it many times now. And it's possible. But you have to convince yourself first that this is actually really worth it and that you have qualified your assumptions and that you... And once you have that conviction, my strong point is conveying the enthusiasm that I have and feel and my conviction. And that's, but this is so obvious. This is so worth it to solve. Is it risky? Yes, of course it's risky. All startups comes with risk. What do you mean? You want to invest with safe returns, go to the bank. If you want to have a great upside doing something meaningful, but with risk, yeah, maybe this is your thing. Yeah, I have a few of these sort of startups now, deep tech startups. So another one that I'm doing is like completely crazy cool startup. So I found this professor who has been discovered that hydrogen has a new condensate form. And in this form, there are spontaneous nuclear processes happening that you can measure. And it's not fission and it's not fusion, but it's something called annihilation. So he's actually found a way to create antimatter. And if you go into, I'm a little nerdy on the tech stuff. Sorry for that. But if you go into the physics, all matter has their antiparticles, so called antimatter. And he discovered a way to create these antimatter in his own little reactor. And I thought it was just such a brilliant thing. And I said, and basically no one believed it. And I was like, I was reading some of his research and I was completely fascinated with this guy. And I reached out to him and I said, I think you're completely right. Let's found a company together and I'll take care of the funding. And let's prove to the world that we can actually do this. And this I did in 2021. And now it's a very repeatable process. We still, most people think it's crazy that we should not be able to do what we're doing, but we are doing it. And it's challenging some known physics with the real data on the measurements. And we're able to release a lot of energy through this small reactor we have. And here we have a chance to change energy in the world if we succeed with what we're doing. And is that a worthy problem to be solved? I guess so, isn't it?
You guess so? Come on, what are we talking about? This is world-changing stuff.
So these are the kind of things I get super fascinated about, like really worthy problems to solve together with brilliant people. And for some reason, I get so fascinated with these brilliant minds. And it doesn't help to just have a technical insight or a deep knowledge on the technical side if you want to start up something. You also need the business side and the finance and getting investors and all of that. So it works as a partnership. It works really well to use my experience and competence to help set up the right structure and to attract the right type of people in to who wants to change the world or do some crazy stuff.
A lot of people want to unlock their ultimate potential but lack the strategy, support, and stamina necessary to achieve their major goals. They often try to overcome these challenges by trying to do it on their own, causing frustration, fatigue, and eventually failure. We have developed a model for a center life, aka the red pill, to help them bolster their beliefs, gain clarity on their path to success, and provide accountability as they take action on their goals. When they take the red pill, they rapidly accelerate attainment of their goals and begin to experience a life of significance and impact. Want to find out more? Hop over to JeromeMyers.co. Now, let's get back to the episode. So you said you raised 140 million euros already.
Dollars. Yep.
Dollars, euros. All right. How does one get to the place where they feel comfortable bringing in that much capital from other people? Because I don't imagine that you could pay all of that back if something didn't work out.
I think it's very important to understand the logic of the investors. How does it actually work? And I was working with professional venture capital, like the best in Scandinavia. I was part of a fund, a 160 million euro fund, and they invested 15 million euros in my company. And they invested 15 million euros in Spotify. And they invested 10 to 15 million euros in other companies. And the general partner at this venture capital company, that was the chairman of the board in my company, he said that we're making these bets. We know from history that out of 10, 6 will not make it. 3 will be pretty good, and 1 will be completely stellar. The only problem is that we don't know who. And the star may take quite some time to work on to make it really shine and to become the star. And that is the challenge. And we know that this one star will pay for all the others. They were one of the early investors in Spotify, and they made much more returns than the entire fund just on that Spotify investment. And in my company, they actually lost 15 million euros. But do you think that they cried over that when they got their star? No. And that was why the chairman of the board was relaxed. And he said it like I started. You have Norway's most expensive MBA, 52 million euros it has cost us. Go use that for something good. And there was no bitterness, there was no hard feelings. And despite the fact that we gave up on this, or the investors gave up on this company eventually because of this extremely difficult market, that of course no one could have predicted in the early days that it was going to be like this. So I think it's, as long as you understand that picture, then you should do something meaningful where you can pay back the investors' money always. You should never make bets that where the chances for no payback. But along the road, there are so many things that happen that you have no control over. And for instance, to make a familiar example, I just read this Elon Musk book that came out a few months ago. And if you read what really happened with Tesla and SpaceX at the worst period in 2008, he was so close to bankruptcy, like literally maybe days or a week away from bankruptcy. Not only one of them, but probably both of them, because he had invested all his fortune in these two companies. And he was able to pull it through, and they came through that. But if people only knew how razor thin that blade is, the balance between the success and what people call failure, then they wouldn't be so harsh on judging the failures. And in my vocabulary, failure is not even allowed as a negative thing, because what is a failure? to me, failure is only a failure if you fail to learn from these experiences. And in every opportunity in life, there is always something to learn. So why in the world are people so harsh on failure? As you said, the stepping stones for me were these two journeys before my two exits. And them, they qualified me for doing something good. And those two exits qualified me for the next era, doing some crazy cool things. So what is failure? Why in the world should we be so afraid of this? If you talk to your, do you have kids?
Yeah, two.
I have a girl and a boy. And if you, when they start to do something, none of them can do things in a proper way. Oh, so you weren't able to do this. Do you call out your failure of your daughter? Come on, of course you encourage her to keep on trying. But when we grow up, there are so many people that are so brutal and so harsh with no insights, and they judge you harshly. And it's, come on, guys, give it another try. Okay, now you learned. You won't do the same thing again. Now you enter the next phase with more wisdom. Why should we be so hard on each other?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are that strict or that tough when they want to make other people smaller so that they feel bigger. Right? I think anybody who is pushing against their limit knows what it's like to go past or to go over the edge. And so I think they have a little more compassion when people don't have the success that I guess they were trying to or striving to achieve. It's only the people that haven't done a lot that I see that are very critical about those who don't do.
And I think that is actually pretty spot on. Those who have done the least are often those who are the most critical. Those who have experience, they understand that at least starting up things is a risky business and the statistics are against you. But come on, give it another try. Try and try again. And then eventually you will figure out something good. And I think it's also, what is success really? Is it material things that really make you happy? Well, at least not for me. For me, it's a whole other dimension of what is success. And for me, it's my family. It's how I can live my life, what the things I can do now, where I can do exactly what I want. These are successes, like in the sense that these are the things I want in my life. Whatever amount, of course, of the financial freedom is a great thing, and that enables certain things that if you compare to it when you don't have this, but an exit is not it. If you think of this as blessing, yes, it may, but it may also not be. I've seen many sort of founders who made exits who turned a really good life into something quite miserable because they lose the energy, they lose the passion. And all of a sudden, they start to worry about money. And I was like, well, why? Why do you want to go into that mode? I chose to do this stuff I love.
I thought you were going to say that success is being able to work on problems or solve problems that you think are worthy to be solved.
And that's what I love. For
you? Yeah.
That is what I love. So yes, exactly.
I thought that would come out eventually. It's interesting because it's, what most people do is define themselves as what they do to earn money. You threw that all out the window when you were talking about success and you talked about what I do with my family. Sure, money is part of that because you've got to pay for the stuff that you do. But it's like, what do I do with my family? You add in the component of solving problems and life gets pretty fulfilling. And we found that to be the formula for people post-exit that want to actually feel successful still. Is doing the things that they love with the people that they love is the thing that gives them the most enjoyment and fulfillment. The thing that we didn't talk about that I'm really curious about, and I don't know where your perspective is because we haven't explored this at all, but how on the day after you closed the business that you guys lost 50 million euros on, what was that like? Because I imagine you didn't roll into a new job. I feel like you probably had some time off to actually reflect and think about what happened.
Yeah, I was very focused on keeping the integrity all the way to always be very transparent and don't lose people even when you're in this sort of a very difficult position. So I actually got contacted by the bank who had collateral in the business, and they wanted me to help close things. So they actually engaged me, yeah, right away to work with them. And I've been working with them since almost 7-8 years. So there was like a very good and solid relationship. So I spent the next 3-4 months on just cleaning up and settling things in a good way and helping the bank. And so there was no empty period, actually. There was, yeah, meaningful things. And I was working as a consultant and helping them out in a business that I knew basically inside out. And I was actually quite happy about this because you don't leave the mess for someone else to clean up. You clean up after yourself and you help them out. And they were really appreciative of this. And then during that time, I of course had a lot of questions of what comes next, what should I do? But I still got some time to reflect on that. And that was the beginning of these two exits. No, it wasn't so bad. And actually this mind shift that the chairman offered as a gift on this very end, this the day of the insolvency, this actually completely shifted my mindset to appreciate that I have been fortunate enough to actually be able to work with all these great people and learn so much. And people talk about an MBA being crazy expensive when it's, what is it now? Maybe $25,000 or $40,000. And that is crazy and expensive. And here I come with 52 million euros. Go figure. Yeah, I thought that actually helped me a lot. It took him 2 minutes to say this, but it was actually like offering a gift to me at a day that was, yeah, quite dark. You spent 7-8 years of your life and now it's over. It's quite hard. You invest a lot of yourself and yeah, your life into something and then it's over. But these few words really shifted my mindset. And I think that is a wisdom to bring forward for young entrepreneurs or even more experienced ones that sort of don't. Sometimes it ends up in not being what you intended, but still you can learn a lot. And I think this is a learning journey. And the more you learn, the wiser you get. And looking back when I was 22 years old and I started to say this, I was working crazy hours because I didn't know what to prioritize. But now I know exactly how to qualify my assumptions, how to convince myself if this is something that is really worth it. And I can use those skills to do something that most other people don't have the experience to do. And I actually tried to teach this some founders locally here that sort of at the beginning of the journey. And then after I had three courses over a few years, and it just really dawned on me how much I knew and how difficult it was for them to assimilate all of this. And that was when the value of this MBA really dawned on me, that you learn the processes, the methods, you learn how these investors think and how they work and what they look for. And that is not easy to actually just transfer. That has to be lived through. And that is the sort of the real value of this life MBA. So I figured out that, okay, instead of trying to help others do this, I know what to do. I can do this much quicker myself. And I can get basically a huge part of the upside because I can get things established and I can raise capital and we can do these cool things that most people think are very difficult. And funding deep tech startups is very difficult because you don't have a proof of concept when you start. And it may take millions to get to proof of concept. So you need a lot of faith and you need to understand how people work and that investors also invest in people in solving actually worthy problems in a probable way. As long as you can't prove it at day one, what you have is really how to structure this story and first and foremost to convince yourself that this is actually worth it. And once you have that conviction and you have challenged your assumptions and you have talked to customers, you talk to partners, you talk to the best people in the world in this area, you get the raw and brutal feedback, which is key elements to convincing yourself, then you have something that is actually fundable. So that's my sweet spot. These are the things I love to do.
That's beautiful. So as we wrap this one up, there's so many places I want to go. I want to go here. So you get the check or the wire. It's more money than you ever had in your account at one time, your personal account. How'd you feel? Was it worth it?
Yeah, it was a relief. People don't see all the efforts it takes to get you to that. I had taken $100,000 in loans, and that is quite a huge investment. And if things fail, you may be indebted for quite some time. And when you check that, when you get that exit and the payout day is there, it was really relief that at least this one paid off well and it didn't go into insolvency or bankruptcy or anything. It was actually a good day. And then after this day, then I had a really sort of reflection time. What in the world should I be doing now? And what are really worthy problems to do? And I was probably through 100 different things I could do. But you need to shift through a lot of these things until you find something that is you're really passionate about. And Nanice was, this nanotech company was one of the things I was passionate about. And when we developed the most slippery surface on the planet and could prove that. And then now we funded this company with 3-4 million euros. We made great progress in these 5 years. As I said, the multi-billion dollar companies are not even close to doing what we're able to do. So it's completely possible to, if you set your mind on the right things and you work together with great people, it's possible.
This is so cool. Our four-step process for people who get to the backside of it and they're figuring out what's next is nourish, evaluate, explore, and then transcend. And that's literally what you did. You took the time to reflect and you nourished. And then you were evaluating the different options, right? Shifting through the things. And then you found the one. And then you use your curiosity with the surface and working with the doctor to make the thing actually work. And now you're going and transcending by sharing that solution with the world. And eventually you'll get another exit on the backside of this because it solves a really big problem.
And actually, there's a fun little anecdote there also, because the same chairman that talked about my 52 million euro MBA, I called him after my exit and he was so happy for me. And he gave me one advice that I can put forward. And he said to me, whatever you do now, Howard, take your time and please don't invest in the stock market, because now you had a great exit. Be very careful. And I think that there is a lot of wisdom in that also.
Yeah. So, it's funny because most people would say that's the safest place to go. I see a lot of founders on the backside of their exit start investing in things that they don't understand. And I think that's even more dangerous than investing in the stock market. But what's really cool is you've taken the stuff and you've put your capital in things that you're curious about, you're exploring, and you have some base knowledge of the understanding or the workings of it so that you can actually have an impact on the outcome, which I think is so important for us as entrepreneurs and founders, is our ability to influence the outcome.
And I did invest a little into the stock market and I wanted to try it out and test it out. But I just feel that this is absolutely not for me. Like, you get so focused on graphs and developments and use, and you can basically do nothing with what's happening. And yes, of course, you can sit tight and you can do this or that, but you get into a flow that is, for me, it was not the right thing. So I decided that, okay, it was actually a very good advice from this VC. And I decided to leave this and actually do the things I really love and go back to that. Yeah, the things I knew. As you said, investing in a stock market is a trade in itself. And you compete now, even worse, you compete with AI and everything. You better be really passionate about that if you want to do this full time. And I decided this was absolutely not for me. But the startup side, that is for me.
He's a builder, y'all. He's a builder. He gets the plane off the ground for sure. Hover, thank you so much for being a guest on the Dreamcatchers podcast. You are the epitome of a dreamcatcher, man. It doesn't matter. Failure is failing to learn. There were so many gems dropped during this episode. The journey is super inspiring. And even the understanding of the way that venture capitalists think about the dollars when they're being deployed just was a mindset shift, because I think so many people out there are terrified to go into debt for a business. And we're also always taught that we can borrow stuff to consume, right? We can borrow stuff to get a car or some of this other stuff. But to go in debt for business, take money from other people to help it grow and expand, is something many people shy away from, and it stifles their growth. And you have had a tremendous track record of raising money. And through the four or five deals or businesses you've led, you've been able to have some successful exits. And my hope is that you'll continue to have that success and be able to inspire more people to actually pursue and achieve the dreams that have been placed on their heart, so that then they can then have the freedom to go work on the problems that they really believe should be solved. And you're a living example of that. So thank you so much for sharing that with our audience.
Thank you, Jerome. And yeah, I'm glad you like this. I think it's interesting, this whole making these exits and what do you do before and after. And that's basically your life. And you got to figure out what are the really key things for you and what you love to do and stick with that. And why wouldn't you stick with that? Come on. When you love it, you love it. So why do something else? So I'm in this fortunate position that I can do the stuff I love. And it happens to be working with solving really worthy problems together with brilliant people.
Solving really worthy problems with brilliant people. Hover, thank you so much. And to our listeners, we'll catch you on the next episode. Your dreams should be real.
Thank you for joining the tribe today. We would love to hear from you. Please don't forget to rate, like, and share. Perhaps someone you know could benefit from what we've discussed. Until the next time, remember that your dreams should be real.